Well, time flies. We all know that. About 2 months ago, we welcomed Family Court Judge Sue Kushner to discuss her job and to chat about the role of family court. Well, we talked for nearly a half hour and only scratched the surface, and we asked her to return, and she is back with us this morning. Family court is best described as a people's court. It affects people's lives on a day-to-day basis, not just the litigants, but has a ripple effect on children and family members and others. And unlike other courts, family court deals with the past and the present and the future. Albany Court Family Court Judge Sue Kushner joins us this morning to help us understand what family court does, what it does not do. And she is wonderful and very insightful, and we love when she comes on the program to tell us many things that perhaps we should, but do not know about the family court system. Sue Kushner, very nice to have you here as always.
Joe, thank you very much for having me back.
Always a delight. The last time we were talking, we talked a lot about the court, its role, why it's sometimes preferable, why it's sometimes not preferable, what works, what doesn't work. And we talked about this, but I want to go in a little bit more detail about how this particular court, because basically when you think family court, you think about younger people. You think
about a nuclear family.
Yes. You think of how it's going to impact children, young adults, and people who are in that system and perhaps do not have other resources to help them through just the day-to-day side-slapping of life.
Right. I think when most people think about family court, they think about parents, children, possibly grandparents, maybe aunts and uncles, siblings.
Yes.
Issues between siblings. But they don't generally tend to think about the fact that family court is also a resource to many other people who don't necessarily fall within that more traditional sense of family, and that being young couples, students, who have relationships with other people, because family court is open to people who have had intimate relationships, both past and present. And there is no age threshold that you have to reach in order to file a petition in family court. So, for instance, I've often advocated that it is a great resource for students. College students. We all know that Albany County and the city of Albany and its environs is a great resource because we have so many different educational institutions, really good ones that work out of our Capital District area. And so, say, for instance, you have students who are dating on campus and maybe something goes badly. Maybe someone ends up in a relationship where there's some violence, or maybe someone ends up in a relationship where there's stalking, or someone ends up in a relationship where, God forbid, there's some sexual misconduct.
Yeah.
And again, it can be a current or a past relationship. They also have family court available to them, and a lot of people don't realize that.
So talk about it as a resource. I mean, how do they decide that it will be the resource for them? Is it their decision, or does the quote-unquote system put them into the place where they end up?
Yeah. Well, I'll address your first question about the system. A lot of times if someone does call for help, they will call the police. A lot of times police officers do tell people that family court is a resource for them. I'm not sure all police officers know that that's true for young dating couples.
Right.
So it may not come as regularly as a recommendation from police officers when they arrive at an incident scene. Probably more so for adults than for young people, like I said. But when it comes to family court, it's up to the young people to realize that it's an option to them for the most part. So they would just come in and file a petition. And why is it a viable option? Well, for a number of reasons. Some people would argue that there's less stigma attached to go into family court because you're not dealing with the criminal court system. And some people may feel that, again, that means a criminal record. Maybe it could affect the other person's ability to get student loans in the future. You know, all the federal regulations that are tied into, you know, criminal records and that type of thing. So, again, the less stigma. And also, a person may just want to be protected and don't necessarily want to feel that they're really prosecuting another person and making life difficult. They just want to feel safe.
Sure.
So the other thing is, in family court, we still take it very seriously. So it's not like it's going to be poo-pooed, but we will put the necessary safety measures in place if they're warranted. Also, people may want to come because they want relief. And again, like I said earlier, not necessarily for it to be a punishment type of thing. Just stop bothering me, or just I don't want this person to come near me because if they do, they've been violent with me in the past. Also, we're known for having quick relief available. Criminal courts don't tend to issue orders of protection as quickly as we can. If you come into family court and you file a family offense petition, you will be seen the same day.
Right.
Simple as that. We have duty judges. And each other four judges in family court, each of us takes a turn being a duty judge. So it basically, if you figure a month has 4 weeks, each one of the judges will be duty judge that week. Any family offense that comes in, as long as it's facially sufficient, in other words, it just doesn't say my name is Sam and nothing else, it will be seen. So we have the ability to issue an order of protection that day, and that's an incredible benefit to someone seeking relief. And then the final thing is you're also not prohibited, if you're dissatisfied with what's going on in family court, from going into the criminal arena.
Yeah.
As we talked last time, we have dual jurisdiction because we have very different functions that we serve for the community.
So if someone decides to petition family court, I guess my question, just backing up on that, is well, given the reasons that you just mentioned, why wouldn't you?
Because you don't know enough to do it.
Okay. So if you were a young couple who's having an issue with stalking,
mm-hmm.
or harassment, and it is one person who feels that they're being harassed, mm-hmm. by another individual.
Right.
So that can, as you say, dual jurisdiction, that can go into a criminal court.
Right.
And it can also go into the family court. But family court, as you, again, for the reasons you just mentioned, of, well, I want it to be worked out. I don't want it to be on our record. I don't want it to be, do we think that clearly sometimes? Because we're so in the moment of I'm being harassed, or I'm being stalked, that I want to get them.
Right. Well, there might be a little bit of that, you know, thinking about I want some retribution.
Sure.
But I think that more than that, it's a matter of if you're in an emergency situation, everyone's inclination is dial 911.
Right.
Isn't that the emergency number? You're feeling panicky. Something just happened, dial 911. So again, while an officer may have the wherewithal and the knowledge to say family court is a resource to you, they may not. So that's why it's so critically important, especially because this is, like I said, a college community, to get that message out that you just need to realize there are more resources there. And so that's why, again, I think coming on the station and making it clear that it's a very viable resource and you're not waiving any rights because criminal court is still an option.
So
it needs to be given a lot of consideration.
So with that said, how do you as a family court judge in the city of Albany, but you know, can be extrapolated.
I have countywide jurisdiction.
Throughout our listening area that, mm-hmm. obviously have family courts in place as well. So how do you deal with the local colleges? Because often it'd be campus security,
right.
the first person that would
right.
show up
right.
if it's on a college campus.
So it's a certain point, especially more so when I was running for office, I would go onto college campuses and let the student, they usually have student, coordinators or a dean of students or whatever.
Yes.
I would go meet with some of them and get a gathering of students together and say, pass the word that family court is an option. But can I go back for 1 second, Joe, because I do think it's important in terms of what our jurisdiction is. Albany County contains three cities. It contains the city of Albany, Waterville, and Cohoes. It contains the towns of Bourne, Knox, Westerlo, Rensselaerville, Queamans, New Scotland, Gilderland, Bethlehem, Colony, and the villages within those towns of Altamont, Voorheesville, Ravenna, Green Island, Menands, and Colony. We have a huge jurisdiction. Huge jurisdiction.
Now, so being a radio station that covers seven states, mm-hmm. we can assume that if for someone listening, whether they're listening in Plattsburgh or whether they're listening in Litchfield,
the same's true
Connecticut,
for their family court.
Right. This court system is going to cover huge areas.
Right.
Okay.
Right. The same thing would be true for any of them. But let's talk about, if you don't mind, how someone would access that process.
Yes.
So the person would come into family court. They would go to a window and fill out a petition. On the petition, it outlines the various criminal statutes that we consider family offenses in family court. And it does not include every single crime that's listed under the penal law.
So that's different than filing a complaint.
It's called a petition.
Okay.
And the person who files it is called a petitioner. And the person, as opposed if it's a criminal matter, the people who file are the DA, so it's the people of the state of New York naming a defendant. In family court, it's the petitioner, who is an individual person, not the state, that's filing it. And they name the person the respondent. So you come in, and what's interesting in family court is you get ex parte relief. In other words, you come in. Not necessarily when the matter gets played out eventually. People have very different scenarios about what happened, what the underlying incident was, and who did what. Usually you get very opposite stories. And, of course, that's my purview as a judge to sort out what's the truth. So one person comes in, and they can get ex parte relief. They would come in. They would file their petition. They would be brought before me or one of the other three judges. I would take sworn testimony very quickly. You raise your hand, you say you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, and you say, okay, on this particular incident, you said that this happened to you, this person threatened to kill you, or this person threatened to kill your dog, or, you know, threatened to steal your car, or whatever, or this person put their hands on you, please tell me what happened. And they have to be able to tell you in their own words what happened. And what they tell you has to fall within one of the crimes that we consider a family offense in family court. And I'll be happy to go through that list with you in a minute, just so people know which crimes we recognize as family offenses.
I do want to hear that. I also want to hear also at what point is an attorney brought in?
Not initially.
Okay.
Not with the petitioner usually. Certainly you can hire an attorney and bring an attorney with you. But if you qualify for an attorney, we will give you one for free. And many times students qualify.
And the turnaround.
But you don't
here,
get them necessarily that moment. The only time there's another attorney in the courtroom, as a matter of course, a attorney in the courtroom on a family offense, is if there are children involved. Because
okay.
An attorney for the child is appointed immediately.
And a child is anyone
for
under the age of?
A child is under the age of 18.
18. No. So if you go into family court and you file a petition, because, again, you mentioned a bunch of scenarios, but let's say it's the harassment or whatever. Mm-hmm. The turnaround then from the time that they file that petition to the time that they're in a courtroom?
So it could be immediately. It could be within an hour if the judge, who also has other cases scheduled on their duty day,
right.
Says, all right, I'll start taking all the emergency petitions at maybe 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock. Or maybe they'll take them that morning.
Mm-hmm.
So they have to work around their regular calendar that they have scheduled. But they will be seen that day, even if we have to go into overtime to do it. We don't like to go into overtime because it means paying state employees longer to remain on the bench with us. It also means in Albany
the realities.
County,
yes.
In Albany County, unlike some other counties, we use the sheriffs in our courthouse. So that means the sheriff's staff, you know, the county sheriff's staff has to remain because each courtroom needs not only an attendant to call the cases, but a deputy to remain in the courtroom in case things get out of hand.
A level of security within the
Correct.
Court environment. Okay, so you were going to give us a list as
yeah.
to
Right. And so I'll go through what we consider family offenses, and it's very specific under the Family Court Act. Disorderly conduct, and that would include generally disorderly conduct if it were a crime prosecuted in criminal court. It generally means something happening in a public place.
Okay.
But for purposes of family court, they will include within a house. So if one person in a house, say there are two parents in a house, and one of them is getting angry and throwing everything around and breaking it, or breaking windows or breaking doors, that would constitute disorderly conduct, something along that line. So it's threatening behavior, abusive or obscene language. That's pretty nebulous, isn't it? Just basically creating an offensive condition without any legitimate purpose. That's what disorderly conduct is. It also includes harassment in the first and second degree. It includes aggravated harassment, and that really deals more with electronics, because as we know, the newer generations really focus a lot on electronics, whether it's Facebook or texting or emailing or any of the number of things, and I'm not even familiar with that exist out
right.
there. Also, it includes sexual misconduct, forcible touching, sexual abuse in the second degree and the third degree, stalking in the first through the fourth degrees, criminal mischief, menacing in the second and third degrees, reckless endangerment. They put some criminal obstruction of breathing or blood circulation. Those are things that were added because there was so much DV going on, and they were saying what were the major types.
So much what going on?
Domestic violence.
Oh, okay.
And a lot of...
Your jargon.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. That's all right.
That's true. I have to remember.
Domestic violence. That's fine.
And there were so many different studies and programs and research going on. And statistically, what kinds of behaviors would lead to a death? Where was domestic violence so serious? What kinds of things were manifesting themselves where a partner would actually end up dead?
Right.
And one of the biggest indicators was a situation where someone actually tried to choke their partner, choke another human being, because that is just such a controlling behavior.
Mm-hmm.
Whether, you know, you're trying to stop them from breathing or, you know, stop their blood flow by, you know, putting your hand on their artery or that kind of thing. So the criminal law came up with that offense to address that issue and give it the type of weight that it needed to be given to really try to prohibit that type of behavior. So guns, whenever someone was brandishing a gun or threatening someone with a gun, that was the other major indicator where a domestic violence would end up in a death historically. And they used to say choking. We aren't even allowed to say choking anymore. You have to say strangulation because you're trying to strangle them. If you
yeah.
think about it, you can choke on a piece of food. It's a
right.
whole different ballgame.
Absolutely.
So, tell me if we have to take a break and I won't finish going through the list.
Well, no, we have about 4 or 5 minutes left.
Okay, let me finish going through them because I do think it is important for people to know. So then we have the criminal obstruction of breathing or blood circulation. Then we have strangulation, which is an offense in itself. Assault in the second and third degree, attempted assault, identity theft. A lot of times you have partners who steal someone's credit card or someone's ID and go out and do things
and
with it. That's considered a family
offense.
You know,
because we wouldn't think of that as, I mean, obviously that's wrong.
Right.
But I wouldn't, you don't think of it in the terms of, that's going to be labeled as identity theft.
Right.
There's mom and dad's credit card, I'm going to take it and I'm going to go buy pizza.
Well, that would also fall under larceny because we're here too, grand larceny in the third and fourth degree.
Yeah.
But identity theft is it occurs. It occurs with people who are close to each other, who have access to each other's social security information and other information.
All that stuff.
Right.
Okay.
Exactly. Which may not be something that would be as easily available to people who aren't in intimate relationships, right? So then you have grand larceny, like I said, third and fourth degree. Here's an interesting one. Coercion in the second degree. That means if someone forces a child or another adult who's in a relationship with them to commit a crime or an act that they know they have the right not to do. If you're making your kid go out and steal things, you know, pickpocket or, you know, you're making, you know,
right.
your partner, but there has to be some threat associated with it. If you don't do this, I will hurt you. If you don't do this, I will slash the tires on your car, you know, something along that line.
And that's obviously threatening behavior,
right.
but also
coercion, because they're forcing them to do something, assist them in doing something generally illegal, but it doesn't necessarily have to be something that's illegal.
When do you feel the system works?
I think the system's capable of working all the time. I really do. But people have to buy into it. They have to follow the orders that are put in place, especially when we're talking about family offenses, Joe. We issue an order of protection. That's largely what the remedy is that you can get out of family court. And it's up if you violate an order of protection and someone calls the police and says you're violating it and you get arrested, that's criminal contempt. That's criminal contempt.
It's a big
you will
deal.
Be put in jail. It is a very big deal. It's the hammer of the law. And that's the other good thing for students, because sometimes students say, or students or any young people, I shouldn't just limit it to students, because, of course, you don't have to be a student to come to family court, any young couple. But a lot of them say, well, I don't want to be the one who does this. And the argument that can be made to that student, and I've made it before to students, you're not doing it. You're protecting yourself. If they violate that order of protection, that's on them, not on you. They're the one who did that.
So if you are, as the Albany County Family Court Judge, as a family court judge who's been doing this now for a little while, where does the frustration come in? Is there a system, is there a part of the system or something that is resources like any other thing that you think, oh boy, we need this or this is what we need?
Resources are always going to be frustrating, because I can think of a situation, something that I'm working on myself right now, where years ago there was some state funding, and I'm going to switch gears here and not talk about family offenses. I'm going to talk about general custody and visitation matters. If parents have neglect or abuse petitions filed against them because Child Protective think that the children need to be protected. And once Child Protective gets involved, and if an order of supervision is put in place against that parent and the children aren't with the parent, the county has the obligation to pay for them to have parenting time with their kids. And it's generally supervised, and it progresses to unsupervised. So that's a given. But in the general custody and visitation situations, there are often instances when one parent or the other parent have either one or a combination of things such as substance abuse issues, anger management issues, domestic violence issues, and they're different. DV involves controlling another person largely. Anger management could just mean you get angry and you break things, right? If you have mental health issues, and again, it's usually a combination. They don't usually occur in an isolated way.
Right.
And that parent isn't allowed to see the children until they take care of certain things. There is nothing in place right now for that parent to have free or reduced cost supervised visitation with their child. And I think that's critical that we get programming in place and funding in place to do that. The reason why is many of the families we serve don't have money. There are good programs out there, but they're costly, because if you want to run a quality program, it costs money. So there is a local place called the Jewish Family Services, which I think very highly of, but it's at least $100 just for intake and then $75 an hour. That's a lot.
That's a lot.
Right. And so you look like you want to take a break, right?
Well, we have to go. We're out of show.
No, are you serious?
Yeah, I am serious.
Joe, that was fast.
I know. It is fast. It goes fast. Do you do that at the end of a case when you're hearing something going, wow, that went fast? Or does it seem like it's really long?
I make sure that I take the right amount of time for my cases. We have very busy caseloads. And so when a next case comes in and someone's been waiting a while, I immediately apologize. What I say is, I know you've waited a long time. I apologize for that. But I have to give the case ahead of yours, just like I will give your case, the time it needs to try to resolve this.
Well, we have to give the BBC their time. And
okay.
But I thank you for your time and for coming in
I'm
and
more
talking
than happy
to us.
To
it's always a delight to speak to you. Albany County Family Court Judge Sue Kushner, again, I thank you for being with us this morning. Have a wonderful weekend.
Very
thank
welcome.
You.
You too, Joe.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.